A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hannah sent us this one. She's an architect here in Jerusalem, and she was trained the way every architect he is trained. You don't put marble in the kitchen. Walk into any stone supplier and ask for Carrara for your countertops, and they'll tell you absolutely not. It stains, it etches, it's too soft. It'll be ruined in a year. They'll steer you toward Taj Mahal or some other stone they consider kitchen appropriate. But then she keeps seeing American designers, high-end kitchens, marble everywhere, and the message there's the opposite. Don't let anyone scare you away from it. The staining and etching become patina, and patina is beautiful. It gets better with age, and she's torn, because she's always imagined having at least one real marble section in a future kitchen for working dough, but then she wonders whether she'd actually want it throughout, because she loves the way it looks. So, her question is, what's the real story? Can marble actually work in a kitchen? Why is there such a different attitude in Israel versus the US? How does it compare with other natural stones on staining, etching, scratching, maintenance, durability, and cost? And if you love marble aesthetically, is choosing it reasonable, or are you signing up for a lifetime of frustration?
So let's start with the part everyone gets wrong, what marble actually is, and why it behaves the way it does.
And I think the first thing to say is that marble isn't just a pretty rock. It's limestone that got cooked and compressed deep underground, which is why it's dense enough to take a polish but soft enough to carve. And the whole story is one mineral, calcite, calcium carbonate.
Calcite is the entire plot. It reacts with acid. That's not a flaw. It's a chemical identity. Drop a lemon wedge on a marble countertop and you're not staining it. You're dissolving it. The acid in the lemon juice reacts with the calcium carbonate, and the surface literally loses a tiny layer of stone. The polish is gone at that spot. That's what etching is.
And this is the thing that gets buried in every countertop argument. Etching and staining are two completely different problems. Etching is a surface chemistry event. Staining is a fluid transport event. Oil seeps into the pores of the stone because marble is relatively porous. Pigments wick in. That's a stain. The dull white ring from a lemon? That's not a stain. The stone has been chemically eaten.
Which means the fixes are different. A stain can sometimes be lifted with a poultice, something that draws the oil back out. An etch can't be cleaned away. You'd have to physically repolish the surface, which means removing more stone. And that's why the two get conflated. People say marble stains, when what they actually mean is it etches, and then they wonder why their stain remover does nothing.
There's a second confusion that matters even more. A huge share of what gets sold as marble in American showrooms isn't marble at all. It's dolomite, or dolomitic marble. Dolomite is a different mineral, calcium magnesium carbonate, and it's harder and much less acid reactive. So when someone tells you their marble countertop has been fine for years, you have to ask, is it actually marble?
That's the dirty secret of the stone yard. The label on the slab says marble, but the geology says something else. And dolomite behaves differently enough that it explains a lot of the testimonials. People think they've discovered that marble is tougher than everyone says, when what they've actually discovered is that they bought a different rock.
And this isn't just a technical footnote. I mean, think about how this plays out in real life. Someone posts a photo of their 10-year-old marble kitchen and says, "See, all that fear-mongering is nonsense." And the comments fill up with people saying, "Well, mine looks terrible. What did I do wrong?" The answer might be nothing. They might have actual marble. The person with the pristine kitchen might have dolomite. Same label, different mineral, completely different result.
It's like buying a car based on the badge and not the engine. The badge says one thing, but what's under the hood determines what happens when you actually drive it.
So that's the setup. This isn't a durability question with one answer. It's a question about what you're willing to trade, and different building cultures trade differently.
Now that we know what we're dealing with, let's get into what actually happens when a lemon meets a countertop. The chemistry is straightforward. Calcite plus acid gives you calcium ions, carbon dioxide, and water. The stone fizzes at a microscopic level, and the surface dissolves. A lemon wedge left on a polished Carrara counter for 10 minutes leaves a white ring because the mirror finish is gone at that exact spot. The light doesn't reflect the same way anymore.
And here's the part nobody mentions. The finish matters more than the stone. A honed Carrara counter? Same lemon? Same 10 minutes? The etch is almost invisible. The surface is already matte, so a dull spot doesn't read as damage. Polished marble is the worst-case surface for a working kitchen, because every etch is a bright white scar against a mirror.
That's the single most practical thing I can say about marble in a kitchen. If you want marble and you want to actually use your kitchen, choose honed or brushed, not polished. The finish is doing more work than the sealant ever will.
And that brings us to the sealant question, because it's the other thing everyone gets wrong. Penetrating sealers slow staining. They fill the pores so oil and wine don't wick in as fast. But they do nothing for etching, because etching is happening on the surface, not in the pores. The sealer can't change the fact that calcite reacts with acid.
The old advice used to be don't seal marble, let it breathe. That's retired. The current standard is an impregnating sealer reapplied every 6 to 12 months. It helps with stains. It doesn't help with lemons. So when a supplier says, just seal it and you'll be fine, they're giving you half an answer. The other half is, don't leave acidic things sitting on it, ever.
And here's a question I think Hannah would ask at this point. How fast is fast? If I spill lemon juice, do I have seconds or minutes? Because that changes what immediate wipe-up actually means in a kitchen where you're also trying not to burn the garlic.
The answer is that etching starts the moment the acid touches the stone. But the visible damage depends on concentration and time. A splash of lemon juice that gets wiped up in 30 seconds might leave a faint mark that you only see in certain light. A lemon wedge sitting for 10 minutes leaves a ring you can't miss. Wine is less acidic than lemon juice, but it's also pigmented, so you get a double hit, a stain, and an etch in the same spot. Vinegar is the worst. It's a stronger acid than lemon juice, and it's clear, so you don't see it sitting there until the damage is done.
So the practical version is, you have time, but not much. It's not like the stone melts instantly. It's more like sunburn. A little exposure you might not notice, a lot of exposure, and you're peeling.
Scratch resistance is a different axis entirely. Marble sits around 3 to 5 on the Mohs scale. Quartzite is around 7. Granite is 6 to 7. A steel knife is around 5.5, which means a knife can scratch marble. Not easily, but it can. Meanwhile, a knife does nothing to quartzite.
Which is why marble is beloved for pastry and hated for general prep. Flour, butter, a bench scraper, dough. The stone stays cool, which keeps butter cold, and the surface doesn't grab. A bench scraper glides. But the moment you're cutting vegetables with a knife on a board that slips, you're gouging the stone. And that's the trade.
And the thermal thing is worth pausing on, because it's not just a nice property. It's the reason marble exists in kitchens at all. Marble has high thermal mass. It stays cool even in a warm room. That's why pastry chefs have used it for centuries. You can roll dough on a marble slab in a hot kitchen and the butter stays solid. On a quartzite or granite counter, the surface warms up and your laminated dough turns into a sticky mess.
Which is exactly why Hannah's instinct for a marble pastry section is historically grounded. She's not inventing something. She's reaching back to a tradition that existed before anyone worried about resale value.
So now we can talk about why Israel and the U.S. look at this stone so differently. And I don't think it's just chemistry. Israel's kitchen culture runs hot, wet, and acidic. Tomatoes, lemon, olive oil. The National Pantry is a list of things that etch marble on contact, and the climate pushes open windows and outdoor cooking, which means more exposure to the elements.
Think about the Israeli salad. It's not one acidic ingredient. It's a pile of chopped tomatoes and cucumbers dressed in lemon juice and olive oil. You make that every day, and you're going to splash. The acid is in the air almost. The idea of a marble counter in that kitchen is like putting a white carpet in a mudroom. It's not that the carpet is bad. It's that the room is wrong for it.
Meanwhile, the American high-end kitchen is often a showroom more than a workroom. It's designed to be photographed. And the design press has spent a decade rehabilitating marble's wear as patina. They're not wrong, exactly. But they're optimizing for a different room. A room where the countertop is a backdrop, not a work surface.
And there's a class dimension here, too. The American patina argument emerged from high-end design magazines where the reader has a second kitchen, or at least a caterer. The wear is aesthetic because the work happens somewhere else. You don't have to live with the mess.
The stone suppliers in Israel aren't being stubborn. They're responding to what actually happens in an Israeli kitchen. If you put a polished Carrara counter in a kitchen where someone makes salad every day, it'll look wrecked in a year. That's not a myth. That's chemistry plus frequency.
And Taj Mahal is the answer they landed on. Taj Mahal quartzite. It's a quartzite, despite the name. Harder, around 7 on the Mohs scale, far less acid-reactive. It reads as a warm white with subtle veining, which is exactly why it became the Israeli and Mediterranean default. It gives you the marble look without the calcite. The trade is that it's a different stone with a different feel, and the best slabs are priced accordingly.
That's the regional split in one paragraph. Israel wants the look, but not the chemistry. America wants the chemistry, but has reframed the damage as character.
The chemistry is clear. The harder question is what you do with that knowledge, and that's where the patina argument lives. Let me take the design press argument seriously, because it's not stupid. A honed or brushed marble surface accumulates a soft, lived-in sheen over time. The etches blend into a mottled texture. It's the same logic as a worn leather sofa or a brass faucet. The wear is the point.
But the counter-argument is that patina implies a surface that ages gracefully and evenly. And marble doesn't do that. It etches in unpredictable, blotchy, high-contrast spots. A lemon wedge leaves a ring. A wine spill leaves a dull patch. That doesn't read as graceful to most eyes. It reads as damage.
The difference between leather and marble is that leather patina is usually distributed. The armrest wears, the seat softens, the edges darken. It happens slowly and broadly. Marble etching is localized and sudden. One dinner party, one spilled glass of wine, and you have a permanent dull spot in the middle of an otherwise polished surface. That's not patina. That's a scar.
Patina is a real aesthetic category, but it's a choice, not a default. It only works if you actually like it. If you're the kind of person who sees a ring on the counter and thinks, that's where we made lemonade in the summer of 2024, then marble is for you. If you see the ring and think, my counter is ruined, marble is a slow-motion disaster.
The finish question is the thing almost nobody raises. I said it earlier, but it's worth saying again because it's the freshest angle in this whole conversation. Polished marble is the worst-case surface for a working kitchen. Every etch is a visible dull spot against a mirror finish. Honed or brushed marble hides etching dramatically better. So if you want marble and you want to use your kitchen, the finish matters more than the stone.
Hannah's idea of one marble section for dough is old and functional. The pastry marble tradition goes back centuries. A cool slab for laminating butter and rolling dough. Historically, it was a separate table, not the main counter. And the reason it works is the thermal mass. Marble stays cool, which keeps butter from melting, which is the whole game in pastry.
The catch is that a marble section in a kitchen will still see lemon, wine, and oil unless it's physically separated or rigorously protected. So the design move is to give it its own zone, near a window or with a slab underneath for thermal mass, and accept that it'll etch. It's a pastry stone, not a showpiece.
The etching on a pastry stone is actually a non-issue because you're not polishing it to a mirror. You're using it as a work surface. The etch marks are just texture. They don't interfere with the function.
Which brings us to cost. And this is where a lot of people get surprised. Carrara isn't the expensive marble. It's the affordable one. That's part of why it's everywhere. Calacatta and Statuario run multiples of Carrara. And Taj Mahal quartzite? The better grades often cost more than Carrara per square foot, but less than the prestige marbles.
Fabrication adds real money too. Marble softness means more careful fabrication. Slower, pricier. Edge profiles, cutouts, seams. All of it takes more attention than quartzite or granite. So the installed cost of a Carrara counter might be lower than you think, but the labor is a bigger slice of the total.
Is a fun fact that ties into the cost conversation. The reason Carrara is affordable is that it's abundant. The Carrara quarries in Italy have been producing since Roman times. Michelangelo got his marble from there. The volume is enormous. Calicata and Statuario come from the same region, but from much smaller, more selective quarries. So the price difference isn't about quality in the sense of durability. It's about rarity and the visual drama of the veining.
You're paying for the look, not the performance. A Calicata slab and a Carrara slab have essentially the same chemistry and the same durability. One just has bolder veins and a wider background. If you're buying marble for a kitchen, you're paying for aesthetics, not for a better stone.
Maintenance reality is the part nobody wants to hear. Sealing every 6 to 12 months. Immediate wipe up of acids. No vinegar-based cleaners. No abrasive pads. Poultice for oil stains. Compare that to quartzite, which is largely wipe and forget. The maintenance burden isn't catastrophic, but it's a permanent tax on attention.
The cleaning products thing is a hidden trap. You can't use any of the standard kitchen sprays on marble. Most of them contain citric acid or vinegar. You have to buy pH-neutral stone cleaner. If someone else in your household grabs the wrong bottle, you get a fresh etch. It's a system, not a surface.
Let's land the design decision without pretending there's a verdict. If you love marble aesthetically and you're willing to accept that the surface will record its history, marble is a reasonable choice. Millions of European and American kitchens have made it. If you want a countertop that looks the same in 10 years as it did on day one, marble is the wrong stone and quartzite is the right one.
The failure mode is choosing marble for the look and then being angry about the wear. That's the one thing you can't do. The wear is the deal. It's not a bug you discover later, it's the entire contract.
A honed Carrara counter after 5 years of real cooking doesn't look ruined. It looks like a soft mottle. The etch marks read as texture, not scars. But only if you wanted texture. If you wanted a mirror, you got a mess.
That's the thing I keep thinking about. The American designers who say don't be scared are right about one thing. The fear is overblown. But they're wrong about another. The patina isn't automatic. It's an aesthetic choice. And the Israeli suppliers who say absolutely not are right about the chemistry, but wrong about the absolutism. The stone doesn't fail. The owner's expectations fail.
The honest answer to Hannah's question is, yes, marble can work in a kitchen, but only if you want what marble actually does. If you want the look and the wear, it's a great stone. If you want the look and not the wear, buy quartzite and stop looking back.
The Israeli buyers weren't avoiding marble because of etching.
What?
I spent 18 months in the mid-90s working for a stone importer in Verona. My job was to walk American and Israeli buyers through the yard and explain why the same slab was priced differently depending on who was asking. The Americans got the good Carrara blocks, the first choice. The clean white ones with the tight veining. The Israeli buyers got what was left, second choice. More blotch, more pits, more inclusions. And here's the thing. A second choice Carrara slab etches worse and stains more. Not because it's a different mineral, because it's got more surface defects. More places for the acid to bite. More pores for the oil to wick into.
The rule that marble doesn't work in Israeli kitchens started as a supply chain artifact.
That's what I think. The buyers would show up, look at the slabs they were being offered, and walk away. And the suppliers back home would say, see, marble doesn't work here, but it wasn't the marble, it was the allocation. The Americans were paying more per block and taking the top of the quarry. The Israelis were getting the floor sweepings, so the design rule hardened out of a pricing problem.
That reframes the whole regional split. It's not just kitchen culture, it's what each market was actually being sold.
It explains why the rule persists, even now, when the supply chain has changed. Design rules have inertia. Once a market decides something doesn't work, it takes decades to undo that, even when the original reason is gone.
I still have a piece of the first slab I ever sold. Small Carrara offcut. I use it as a cheese board. It's covered in etch marks from 25 years of lemon juice, and I think it looks better now than the day I got it.
Does that prove the patina argument, or just prove you're sentimental about a rock?
Couldn't tell you. But my cousin in Haifa has a Taj Mahal quartzite kitchen, and she hates it. Too hard to cut on. Everything skids. She says she misses the grip of a softer stone.
That's the thing nobody mentions about quartzite. It's hard, which means it resists scratches. But hard also means slippery. A bench scraper on quartzite doesn't glide the way it does on marble. It skates.
The trade runs both directions. Marble grips but etches. Quartzite resists but slides.
My cousin's not a baker. She just makes salads. And she hates the counter. So there you go.
The Israeli rule is partly a supply chain artifact, and the American patina argument is partly a showroom aesthetic. And what that says about design rules is uncomfortable. They're not just technical judgments. They're sentiment. Layers of pricing, allocation, marketing, and culture that harden into something that feels like a law of nature.
As engineered surfaces and quartzites get better at imitating marble, the choice becomes less about geology and more about whether you want a surface that records its use. That's a philosophical question, not a technical one. Do you want your kitchen to have a memory, or do you want it to be a photograph?
That's the one thing I'd take from this. Marble doesn't fail. Expectations fail. If you want a surface that keeps a diary, marble is the most honest stone you can buy. If you want a surface that forgets, buy quartzite and don't look back.
Hannah's instinct for one marble section is the smart version of this. A small zone where the wear is the point. The rest of the kitchen can be quartzite. You get the look where it matters and the durability where it matters more.
That's the compromise that respects both cultures. The American acceptance of wear and the Israeli insistence on durability. One stone for the memory, one for the work.
If you do go that route, here's the practical version. Get a honed Carrara slab for the pastry section. Seal it twice a year. Keep a dedicated bench scraper and a pastry cloth nearby. And when someone sets a lemon down on it and walks away, which will happen, let it go. That ring is now part of the stone's story.
The marble section will become the most interesting surface in the kitchen. Not in spite of the marks, but because of them. That's the whole argument for marble in one sentence.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Props, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.